Good morning, friends. Welcome to the Mark Arum Show. Very excited about today's broadcast. It's been a while since I've been excited. It's been a lot of trepidation before I open this mic every morning. But what do we have on tap for you? Obviously, we're going to update the Israeli war, the latest on the Speaker of the House. 30 minutes from now, we're going to talk to a local Atlanta woman that actually helped get students out of Israel and back stateside. And then at 11:05, our musical correspondent, Deborah Green, pulled some strings. We're going to be talking to the legend, Graham Nash, live on the program. Yeah, Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young, that Graham Nash. Very exciting stuff. I want to get you caught up to date, though, first in the Israeli war. What do you need to know that happened overnight? Here's the very latest out of Israel in Gaza. Humanitarian aid trickling into Gaza as hostages have begun to trickle out after Hamas released two American hostages on Friday. Two more were released yesterday. Even though I'm Hebrew, I'm going to butcher these names. Yocheved Lifshitz, one of the more tragic last names in the Jewish faith, and Nuret Cooper, ages 85 and 79. They had a press conference this morning, and they spoke in Hebrew, but the other one translated. So just bear with me. I'm going to play some audio here. This first cut is from Sharon Litzfitz, the daughter of 80-year-old Yocheved Lifshitz. Am I going to get in trouble saying that?
I think our boss is okay with it.
Is it okay?
Yeah.
It's like...
as long as we say it all together quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're quoting a name, so you're not...
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, these are the two Lifshitz talking about the conditions and treatments during her mother's time with Hamas.
She's telling us about sharing food with the people, that the people, when she first arrived, they told them that they are Muslims and they're not going to hurt them, and that they ate the same food that the Hamas was eating.
So that's the daughter of the woman that was kidnapped, Sharon Lifshitz, translating for her mother. More from that press conference about where they were held after the kidnapping.
There they walked for a few kilometers on the wet ground. There are a huge network of tunnels underneath. It looks like a spider web.
Yeah, so a huge, I mean, we knew about, we had heard about the underground tunnel network that Hamas has built under Gaza, and that's where at least these hostages were taken. And here's again the mom, the daughter, translating for the mom about how they were taken hostage by Hamas.
My mom is saying that she was taken on the back of a motorbike with her body, with her legs on one side and her head on another side. That she was taken through the plowed fields with a man in front on one side and a man behind her. And that while she was being taken, she was hit by sticks by Shabak. Yeah, Shabab people.
Yeah, so she went on to say that she did go through hell, described how she was beaten and taken underground into the Hamas underground tunnel network. But the good news is that two more hostages were released. There was an expert on CNN this morning. I reached out to him. He works for Axios in Jerusalem. He can't join us, unfortunately. But he said that Hamas didn't really... that the heads of Hamas hadn't really thought out the hostage-taking plan and how it's complicating matters for them right now. And he thinks that we are going to see more and more hostages being released, which is great because my initial thought when we found out that the hostages were being taken, and immediately I'm going to, what was that show, Homeland? Remember that show?
That was a great show, yeah.
I'm thinking they're going to get tortured. So apparently at least the four that have been released were not tortured. They weren't treated incredibly well, but they weren't getting their fingernails pulled or anything. But this reporter in Jerusalem said they're not really sure what to do now with the hostages. They didn't think it out what the international response would be to them taking. I mean, these aren't political prisoners. These aren't military prisoners. It's a grandmother, 85 years old. Now, an interesting note is, again, hearing from Mrs. Lifshitz, and some of the other hostages, they made it seem like Hamas was very well prepared to have hostages. There was a she's 85, right? If you're 85 or your mom's 85, you know they take a lot of medicines. And she's like, they had all the medicines that I would need, whether it would be blood pressure or like they had these stocked and ready to go, which makes me cringe because we're looking at the relief efforts for the Gazan civilians. Like, we have no medicine. But Hamas is, meanwhile, has apparently have stored all of these.
Stockpiled it.
Yeah. So she's like, yeah, but I had all my medicines available. They had tampons. And is there...
Yeah, products, yeah.
Yeah, they have products stocked for female hostages. So they knew they were going to take hostages, female hostages of all... It's a troubling situation. It's a troubling situation. But, oh, one more thing from the expert on the hostage situation. It appears that... So the Lifshitz have dual citizenship. And the expert from Axios says it appears that Hamas is going to, if they're going to keep releasing hostages, and we don't know if they are, we are certainly hopeful that they are, that they're going to give priority to hostages that are citizens of nations other than Israel as well, French citizens or German nationals, et cetera, et cetera. But I mean, I'm very happy that from what we've seen right now, the hostages haven't been tortured. They obviously Hamas understands the value of these hostages in the situation. And hopefully we're going to see more and more be released. So that's the latest on that. There are more developments from Israel and Gaza. I'll give you the rundown when we come back. Again, we're going to focus on Israel for the first hour-ish of the show. Then I want to talk about the race for the speakership. And how about, this was stunning, rents are actually going down. And it's actually it's better now for the first time in 20 years. It makes more financial sense to rent a place than to buy a place because of mortgage rates. Oh, yeah. And Graham Nash, Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, 2-time inductee into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, is going to join us. All of the social media is active during the show at Mark Arum, M-A-R-K-A-R-U-M.
They treated us with gentle care and all our necessities they provided.
That's another translator from Yachved Lifshitz, one of the two hostages that were released by Hamas earlier today in Gaza. Welcome back to the Mark Arum Show. I just realized, Deborah, one of my roommates in college was Keith Lifshin, not Lifshitz, Lifshin. And it was funny because I went to a Catholic school, a Jesuit school, and whoever was in the registrar's office were set, they're like, well, we have two Jewish kids enrolled. Let's just room them together. They'll know.
Like,
what's
at least they'll have something. Yeah, in common.
I don't know if that was weird or it was sweet that they're like, well, the only two Jewish guys. We'll just put them together in a room. Anyway, new reporting from Axios. Axios all over this. They are saying that Israel is open to holding off their ground attack if there is a wide release of prisoners. That's fantastic. I wish there was an easy way out of this situation. If there is, I can't think of it. But I know in my heart of hearts that if Hamas was not in power in Gaza, in control of the Palestinians, there would be an easy way out of this. Now, I know Hamas isn't going to lay down their arms. If they did, this thing would be over. I really believe that. If Hamas left Gaza, this thing would be over. I really do believe that. Problem is, no country is going to take Hamas in. That's why Egypt's got the blockade, and Egypt has the blockade on the sea, and they don't let anyone from Gaza into Egypt, even though it's a fellow Arab nation. Hamas is the thing that's destroying this. And in turn, Israel wants to destroy Hamas, the terrorist organization. If Hamas is somehow taken out of this equation, I think the whole situation will de-escalate. The problem is that I'm not smart enough to come up with a solution to that. All right, what else did you miss on the Israeli Gaza situation? Gaza aid. This is good news. 20 trucks carrying humanitarian aid passed the Rafah crossing into Gaza for us, it would be this morning, according to the UN Office for Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs. Total of 34 trucks were able to enter Gaza over the weekend, it said, but aid agencies have warned that the first modest deliveries will do little to alleviate the deepening needs of the more than 2 million people living in the besieged enclave. The initial deliveries also did not include fuel, which is vital for the functioning of hospitals. Now, I saw a report also that there are, under Hamas control in southern Gaza, massive fuel tanks, like thousands upon thousands of liters of fuel that they are just stockpiling and not giving to the citizen. I mentioned the ground invasion. Before that, Axios News broke. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu warned Israel's fight against Hamas could be a long war as the IDF prepares to mount a ground offensive into Gaza. Israel soldiers taking part in training exercises to bolster their readiness and capabilities for ground operations. I don't want that to happen. I don't want more innocent civilians to die in either Israel or Gaza. And the death rates are climbing. Now, here's the problem. Most of the information we're getting out of Gaza right now is from the Palestinian Ministry of Health, which is under Gazan control. And they've put out some false claims. They reported that it was an Israel missile that took down that hospital, which wasn't true. They reported that over 500 people died in that attack, which wasn't true. Thankfully, it wasn't true. It was less than 100. So everything that comes out of the Palestinian Ministry of Health, you have to take with a grain of salt. They have reported that 700 have been killed in Gaza in a 24-hour period. I hope that's an exaggeration, obviously. We don't want no one in the right mind wants innocent civilians killed. More information from the Israeli war. According to Great Britain, at least 12 British nationals were killed in Hamas attacks on October 7th, and five are still missing. This is a quote from them. We can confirm at least 12 British nationals tragically killed in last week's terrorist attacks, the spokesman said, adding that five Britons still missing, but he could not be more specific on the number of UK nationals the government believes may have been captured by Hamas. This is an interesting piece. I have time to play this? I do. By the way, coming up at 9:35, we're going to talk to a local woman that helped students get out of Israel and back safely to the States. This is CNN's Jake Tapper talking to a Hamas leader's son. So one of the founders of Hamas, who eventually became a spy for Israel. So I mentioned taking things with a grain of salt. This is the son of a former Hamas founder who eventually became a spy for Israel. But interesting stuff on from this man's perspective.
Hamas.
On what's Hamas's motive here.
Is the enemy of not just Israel, but the Palestinian people. Strategically, do you think it is wise for the Israeli Defense Forces to stage a ground incursion into Gaza to uproot Hamas? Do you think that's a smart thing to do?
Well, you know, now it's a war time, unfortunately. And this war, Israel did not start. Hamas started this war. And Hamas, in fact, in this equation, blood for money, they start a war every few years. Whenever they want money, you know, they shed children's blood. This is their game. And this has to stop. This have to come to an end. And unfortunately, the price is not going to be cheap. In fact, I feel very sorry for Israel that they have to go into Gaza, where there are booby traps all over the place and tunnels all over the place. I don't know how many Israeli soldiers have to die in order to destroy Hamas. This is the most complicated mission a modern army has in our modern day. Now, what I suggest, you know, to the Israelis, that they wait, they take their time, they collect intelligence. And what I need from the United States to give enough support. In fact, I would like to see the Navy SEALs taking part in this. I know this sounds horrible, but again, I speak as a taxpayer, as an American today.
So he's an American. This is Mossab Hassan Youssef, son of a Hamas leader who eventually turned spy for Israel, now a U.S. citizen, talking about what Israel needs to do in this conflict.
That we need to be unified. We need to give Israel the support. We need to free Palestinians and free Gaza from Hamas ruling.
You were embedded with Hamas before you were, well, first you were with Hamas, and then you were embedded with Hamas on behalf of the Shin Bet. What can you tell us about what motivates these people? What are they like? What are the leaders of Hamas like? What do they want?
Well, they are a religious movement. And this is what everybody is afraid to say. If Hamas was a political movement, then we can satisfy their political ambition. But Hamas is a religious movement that does not believe in political borders. You know, they want to establish an Islamic state on the rubble of the state of Israel. They want to annihilate the Jewish people and the Jewish state. They want to kill everybody who support Israel, then establish an Islamic state. But this is not the end, because their ambition is global. They want to establish eventually an Islamic state, a global state. So this is what's on their mind. And we know that we cannot satisfy their ambition. And the more power, you know, we give them, the more aggressive they are going to be. Hence, we cannot give Hamas what they want. We cannot give them what they are asking for, whatever it takes. You know, in war, people die. And we need to prepare public. You know, I say that this is an ugly war. Israel did not start it, but Israel will end it.
Mossab Hassan Youssef talking to Jake Tapper on CNN about Hamas's motives and what Israel should and shouldn't do. Good stuff there. Hamas is the problem. No Hamas, there's no war. Question is, how do you get Hamas out of the equation? Judd standing by with the latest. Oh, there's breaking news on Georgia's abortion law. Judd will have that. The race for the speaker ongoing right now. We will get an update from CBS on that story at 6:35. And coming up after news, weather, and traffic, this isn't a great story. Local woman was able to get students out of Israel back stateside. She's going to join us live on the Mark Arum Show next. 9:37 on the Mark Arum Show. Coming back to some possible breaking news. CNN reporting that former President Trump attorney Jenna Ellis expected to plead guilty in the Georgia election case. It would be the fourth plea deal from that widespread RICO case here in Fulton County. We'll get more information on that as it becomes available. But again, former Trump attorney Jenna Ellis expected to plead guilty in the Georgia election case. We'll monitor that situation as well as the war in Israel, and we'll update the race for the speakership. A lot of stuff going on this Tuesday edition of the Mark Arum Show. Oh, and Hall of Famer Graham Nash going to join us at 11:05 from Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. I mentioned before the break that we're going to be joined by a woman that I'm going to go ahead and call her a hero. She's Sherry Levitan. She's from Sandy Springs, Georgia. She joins us live on the Mark Arum Show. Sherry, welcome, my friend. How are you?
Mark, thank you so much for having me on today. You have no idea how much I appreciate it. And I appreciate what you're doing. My gosh. It's
thank
amazing.
You. Thank you so much. So for folks that don't know, it's an intriguing story. Let's go back to before the terrorist attack on October 7th. You were actually in Israel. What was going on? What were you doing there?
So I have a long history with Israel. Actually, my family were Holocaust survivors. So half the family went to Israel in 1949. And I actually lived there as a kid. 50 years ago, I was there for the Yom Kippur War. So fast forward, I work for an Israeli-based travel company called Kenneth Tours. We work with a lot of North American groups to take groups to Israel. And I went there for an amazing fourth quarter kickoff. Post-COVID, we were going to have an amazing fourth quarter with people coming in groups and individuals. And in the meantime, I also had a niece who was having a bat mitzvah. So I said, okay, I'm going to go for 3 weeks. I'm going to hang out, do a little family stuff, do some work, and then come back. And that's how I got there. And I landed on like the 30th of September, had an amazing week with family, did a few, you know, business meetings, things like that. And then Friday night, nice dinner, family time, go to bed, and Saturday morning woke up to bedlam. So that's really how it all started for me.
So you were in Israel during the Hamas terrorist attack on October 7th. Before we get into the amazing efforts you did to get other folks out of there, how did you get out of Israel, Sherry?
Honestly, Mark, I wasn't going to go. At the very beginning, we thought it was like the other kinds of, you know, campaigns rocket fire, things like that, that we often have been through in Israel. So at first, I didn't think anything of it. As the day wore on the 7th, it became apparent to every one of us that this was totally different. But still, I was debating not coming home, and I was in a hotel, and I was in the lobby grabbing a bite to eat, and I bumped into a friend in the lobby, and he said to me, "What the heck are you doing here? You need to leave." And I said, "What are you talking about?" And he grabbed my hands, and he said, "No, you don't understand. This is not like the other times. You have to go." And I ran up to my hotel room, and I called Delta. And that's when I started to learn very, very quickly that the U.S. carriers were canceling flights all over the place. First United, then American, and Delta. And I called a friend of mine who's in the flight business, and I said, "Listen, everybody's telling me I got to get out of here. And what do I do?" And in a very heavy, wonderful Israeli accent, she says, "You get on El Al and you go to Europe." And so that's when I started to make plans to do. But I got to tell you, it was not easy to decide. I have two sisters who live in Israel. I have a nephew in a tank in the north. I have cousins. I have family. And I have employees. How do you decide as an American that you're going to get on a plane and leave when they can't? So it was very emotional, very difficult. It was my two grandsons in Chicago who won out when they said, "Baba, come home." So,
So you were able to get on an El Al flight. What, did you leave on the 7th or did you have to leave on the 8th or 9th?
No. So the first flight, because it had been holiday time, Mark, a lot of people had already been booked to leave Israel after the holidays. The holidays officially ended on the 8th. So the 8th, it was totally booked. The 9th, totally booked. The first flight that I could actually get on was Tuesday the 10th. So I took an El Al flight from Tel Aviv to London. And then from London, I flew directly back to Atlanta. I got back to Atlanta on Wednesday the 11th.
Talking to Sherry Levitin from Sandy Springs live on the Mark Arum Show, who was, unbelievable timing that you were in Israel on that fateful October 7th. You mentioned that, you know, you've been to Israel many times and there's been many attacks against Israel. This is, you know, it's kind of everyday life that, you know, the Iron Dome sound goes off. But you found out shortly thereafter that this was different. What was the reaction on the ground as more and more Israelis realized, this isn't a normal attack. This is something extraordinary.
Well, it happened very quickly. First of all, the alarms went off at like 6:30 in the morning, and it was constant. And if you've never been in a war situation, there you are minding your own business. This siren goes off. You have to run into a bomb shelter, and you really have no idea when you're even going to get out. So Saturday, we were in and out all day. And even though I was staying in the suburb of Tel Aviv, you could hear helicopters, planes, booming, everything overhead. And everybody knew this was not normal immediately. And then the news reports started to come out about what happened. And we started to hear about people kidnapped in the music festival and people were missing and family calling friends, this, that. You couldn't even find anybody. You didn't know what was going on. And all it did all day Saturday was escalate. And when we heard that there were actually terrorists that had infiltrated and were now running around the country, motorcycles, jeeps, whatever it was, kidnapping people, everybody was terrified. You could not function on Saturday at all. Even in a hotel, I wouldn't even step outside the hotel to get a breath of fresh air. I mean, it was terrifying. And I had been there before, but this was something above and beyond.
Sherry, did your niece ever get to have her bat mitzvah?
Yes, she had it the Tuesday before all of this.
Okay, good.
We even had a nice Friday Shabbat dinner with the family, and everything was fine until Saturday morning. And then I never actually saw family again.
Sherry gets an El Al flight out of Israel to Europe to come back to the United States, but the story doesn't end there. Once she's home, she does something remarkable to get other students that are trapped in Israel back home safely. We'll continue our amazing conversation with the amazing Sherry Levitin coming up in just a couple minutes on The Mark Arum Show. Following breaking news here on The Mark Arum Show, confirmation attorney Jenna Ellis taking a plea deal in Fulton County. We'll have more on that in 10 minutes during the news. Phil Holloway, WSB legal analyst, will join us live and break it down for us at 10:50. Continue our discussion with Sherry Levitin from Sandy Springs, Georgia. She was able to evacuate Israel a couple of days after terrorist attack. But the story doesn't end then, Sherry. You mentioned earlier that you're in the travel business. And once you got home stateside, you took it upon yourself to get students out of Israel. Take us through that. And what did you do, and who did you get home?
So actually, Mark, on Sunday, the 8th, I knew I had my flight to get home. And then Monday morning, the 9th, before I left Israel, I got a phone call from my client here in the States, the Jewish National Fund USA out of New York. They operate a program in Israel called the Alexander Musk High School in Israel program. It's an educational program for high schoolers. I get the call and they say to me, Sherry, we got to get 107 kids out of Israel.
107?
107.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
Yeah. Big number with a couple of chaperones. And I pause and immediately had flashes to my own feelings about the war, being in a bomb shelter. I had children who were in the Alexander Musk program years ago. So I imagined immediately the parents freaking out. And when I got this call, I said, okay, give me a few hours. And I hung up. I said a few choice words to myself. How am I going to get this done? And I made a call. My company is part of a larger Israeli travel company, and I know they have a flight department. And I knew from my own experience, I had to get them on an El Al flight or some Israel-based carrier because the planes were on the ground. So the fastest way to get the kids out was to get them on a flight that originated in Israel. And exactly what I went through for myself, I called them and I said, listen, I need a plane. I need to get 110 people on it. I will go anywhere in Europe. And they said, give us a few hours. They actually called me back in an hour and a half and they said, Sherry, you must be living right because I have a plane for you on Israel and we can go from Tel Aviv to Rome and we can leave on Wednesday. That was 2 days away.
Oh my goodness.
And I was like, done. So I call New York and I say, I got a flight. But you got to go to Rome. Do not fight me on this. We have no other choice. This is it. I can keep them all together. Just give me the approval. They said, do it. And then we put the wheels in motion because we had to then arrange for them to spend a night in Rome, buses to transport them to and from the airport, meals, the whole bit. And then you pray, right? I call my main company again, and I say, okay, guys, you did great. We're going ahead to Rome. But now you got to get me to the States. And they said, where do you want to go? I said, preferably JFK, but I'll take any place on the East Coast. They called me in an hour and they said, how's Alitalia from Rome to Boston?
Wow.
And I just lost it. So,
Sherry, I got to jump in because I'm just so were you in charge? Did you originally book these 107 plus people? Were you the originating travel agent that took them to Israel?
No, actually, they came through a different department and program.
Okay.
I don't tend to work with teenagers.
Gotcha.
We do a lot of adult travel, but because JNF is my client, they know.
Understood.
They do most of their mission trips with us.
So I'm thinking logistically. So, I mean, for you to get out, like, that's great. You got one seat on El Al and you're out. 107. Before you said you got a whole plane, I'm like, logistically, how are you going to do you? How did you get a whole plane for them? That's amazing.
So actually, when they saw that there was the demand, Israel opened up another commercial flight.
Okay.
So it wasn't chartered. It wasn't anything crazy. They just saw the demand. They agreed to it. There was a little bit of pressure pushed. These are Americans. These are students. They're teenagers. We got to get them out. The real miracle was the fact that Alitalia had this plane going from Rome to Boston, and it was empty enough to put people on. That was like the true miracle.
Amazing,
of it.
Yeah.
And so it took a couple of days, but we got them back to the States. And
how many days were they in Rome?
Just overnight. They flew from Israel to Rome.
That's a shame. Like, well, we'll just spend 4 days here, Sherry.
Mark, do you know Jewish parents?
I understand. I understand.
That's even want them there.
Remarkable. So you got them all. I mean, golf clap, Sherry. That's fantastic. Just to be able to move that many people out of a danger zone and get them home safely, that's remarkable. Unbelievable job.
Well, Mark, I mean, I know this is getting a lot of attention, and I appreciate it. But the truth of the matter is there were a lot of people. I orchestrated it for sure, but the flights coming through was a miracle in itself. Getting a hotel for 110 people in 24 hours was kind of a miracle as well. And I think we got lucky all the way around. I'm just happy I was there because it was easier to do all this on Israel time. And even when I was flying myself from Tel Aviv to London, I was texting and calling and, you know, doing WhatsApping, whatever I had to do to make sure that everything kept moving. And even when I got back to Atlanta, I landed here on Wednesday. I was monitoring the kids till they got back to Boston on Thursday. So
divine intervention is the only explanation.
Yeah, that's
Sherry, I'm going to ask you a final question, and it's kind of off topic, but you mentioned you had trepidation leaving. You didn't want to leave, but your grandkids, you know, that was the pull to bring you back stateside. Two-part question. We don't have much time. Do you feel regret that you're not still in Israel with your family? And do you want to go back while this is ongoing?
The answer is yes, and I am going back.
Good.
I'm working with groups right now who want to take people. I have two groups going next week. And my own brother is a rabbi in New York, and we're going to go the middle of November. And Mark, you can join us if you want.
Well, I said yesterday on the show, I'm pushing the bosses here. I want to go to Israel and do the show from Israel while this is ongoing. I just don't know if they will let me or the station can afford to put me up.
Mark, if they will fly you out there, I'll cover all your land costs.
Wow.
Call me after the show. We'll make this work.
Does that include food? Because that's probably going to be the biggest expense.
You're not going to feel like eating after you hear and see what you're going to experience.
True.
But we'll deal with that. No, it would be my honor to take you.
Yeah, I just got to convince the bosses to let it happen. Sherry, thank you so much for your time. Amazing story. Please keep in touch. All the best to your family over in Israel. And on behalf of everyone listening, thank you for your Herculean efforts to get those 110 people back stateside.
Thank you, Mark, and thanks for all you're doing to cause awareness on what's happening.
Oh,
I really appreciate it.
My absolute pleasure. Sherry Levitin, Sandy Springs. What an amazing story. What an amazing woman. We got so much breaking news to cover. Jenna Ellis pleads guilty in the Georgia election case. Sabrina Cupid standing by with the latest on that. All the social media is active at Mark Arum, MarkArum. 2 minutes away from news, weather, and traffic on 95.5 WSB. On this beautiful Tuesday in the A. Welcome back, friends. Mark Arum at your beck and call till noon. An amazing first hour there. If you missed the interview with Sherry Levitin from Sandy Springs, make sure you download the podcast after the broadcast today. Powerful, powerful stuff. An amazing story of just stick-to-itiveness to try to get 110 people, mostly students, out of Israel as the war rages on. We're going to continue to update the war in Israel. We're going to check in with the race for the speakership in 30 minutes. But breaking news that broke last hour, and this has to do with the racketeering, the RICO case in Fulton County. We've already had three plea deals entered with the Fulton County DA's office. And then out of nowhere today, former President Trump attorney Jenna Ellis has accepted a plea deal. This is Ellis addressing the court after accepting her plea deal.
Years of experience than I to provide me with true and reliable information, especially since my role involved speaking to the media and to legislators in various states. What I did not do, but should have done, Your Honor, was to make sure that the facts the other lawyers alleged to be true were in fact true. In the frenetic pace of attempting to raise challenges to the election in several states, including Georgia, I failed to do my due diligence. I believe in and I value election integrity. If I knew then what I know now, I would have declined to represent Donald Trump in these post-election challenges. I look back on this whole experience with deep remorse. For those failures of mine, Your Honor, I have taken responsibility already before the Colorado Bar who censured me, and I now take responsibility before this court and apologize to the people of Georgia. Thank you.
Jenna Ellis there in tears at some point during her testimony in front of the court. So she's the fourth defendant now in the Fulton County election interference case to strike a deal with prosecutors. Ms. Ellis pleaded guilty to one count of aiding and abetting false statements and writings. The count stems from her testimony before a Georgia Senate subcommittee. Remember that subcommittee hearing back on December 3rd, 2020, along with co-defendants Rudy Giuliani, Ray Smith. Ellis, quote, knowingly, willingly, and unlawfully made false statements about the election fraud in Georgia, according to the new charging document. All right, so what is her sentence? Under the terms of the agreement, Ellis must serve 5 years probation, 100 hours of community service, and pay $5,000 in restitution to the Georgia Secretary of State's office. Now, what it doesn't say, if she's pleading guilty to a misdemeanor or a felony. So Chesbro pled guilty to a felony. The Kraken, I always forget her name, Sidney Powell, she pled guilty to misdemeanors. I don't know if Jen Ellis pled guilty to a misdemeanor or a felony. Again, Phil Holloway is going to join us in 42 minutes, our legal analyst, to break it down for us there. So, all right, 5 years probation, 100 hours of community service, $5,000 in restitution. And, again, this is the strongest line as far as the DA is concerned. She has agreed to testify truthfully when called, provide documents and other evidence, refrain from posting about the case on social media, and she's going to pen an apology letter to Georgia voters. Ellis's deal comes less than a week after two of the other cases, co-defendants Sidney Powell and Kenneth Chesbro, struck similar agreements with Fulton County prosecutors just days before they were going to go to trial. But those two plea deals, you might remember that they asked for the speedy trial. And when they asked for that, it seemed like that was great news for the other co-indictees, for the other 17 indictees, because Fonnie Willis, the DA, would have to try their cases first. And all the other defendants would get to see what exactly the DA has. So at first blush, it was like, oh, Sidney Powell, Chesbro, they're jumping on the sword. They're going to get the speedy trial. And then everyone else is going to see what the DA exactly has. And Sidney Powell's plea, I was like, all right, it kind of makes sense. The Chesbro one really, really took me off guard because by all accounts, Kenneth Chesbro, like top flight attorney, like he's done some remarkable stuff in the legal community in his career. And the fact that the DA still doesn't have a jury for that gang case, unless I'm wrong and Phil will correct me, If the DA couldn't seat a jury in the Chesbro case within 2 weeks, he walks. So I thought, well, he's just gonna wait it out, because if the Fulton County DA can't get a jury in the gang case in a year, there's no way they're gonna be able to seat one in 2 weeks. That's why I was really surprised that Chesbro took the plea deal. I thought he was just gonna roll the dice and say, all right, there's no way we're gonna get a jury sat in 2 weeks, but he took that deal. All right, and now Jenna Ellis, one of the more high-profile folks that were indicted. She, you know, she's not a Trump or a Giuliani, but she's up there in that next tier. So we'll see if that's just yet another domino to fall. We'll monitor that. I also want to monitor the race for the speaker. Let's go to CNN. Manu Raju just talked to Kevin McCarthy in the halls of Congress.
Ballot in the secret ballot election. This is to nominate their candidate for Speaker of the House after 3 weeks to the day when Kevin McCarthy was ousted in that historic and unprecedented vote, unable to get behind a candidate to replace him so far. Republicans are furious about everything that has gone down. They have been at loggerheads with one another amid this Republican infighting that has left the House completely paralyzed. Nothing can be acted upon until the Speaker of the House is elected. And today they're trying to nominate someone who would need to get a majority of the vote in the conference to get nominated, then a majority of the House vote, a much higher threshold, 217, to be elected Speaker. Unclear if that can happen. But in talking to a number of the Republicans over the last day, it is very clear they are getting an earful from their constituents back home, and they are concerned that this fallout could cost them the Republican majority.
All right, so there's Manu Raju live in the halls of Congress. So this is pretty interesting. We talked about how difficult it's going to be to get one candidate. So from what I'm understanding, there are now 8 candidates for Speaker of the House. So all the Republicans are getting in. They started at 9 this morning. They're all getting in there, and they take a vote. Here are the possible 8 candidates. Who do you want? And secret ballot, again, which I think is key. And everyone writes down, you know, like, oh, let's do the guy from Georgia. Or let's do, who's it? The other one?
Majority Whip.
Majority Whip. All right. And then they take the secret ballots. They get all, and then they count them. And whoever's last on the list gets removed. So whoever comes in 8th, it's like Survivor, right? I don't know how Survivor
Works. They vote them off one by one.
So the first ballot has 8 candidates. Whoever comes in 8, they're scratched off the list. They're off the island. And then they do it again with the 7 candidates. And everyone gets a secret ballot. All right, who do you want? They vote again. Whoever's 7th, you're off the island. And eventually, it'll get down to 2 candidates. And then I don't know what the hell they're going to do there, though, because I guess they support.
In Survivor, they do a challenge.
Is there going to be a challenge?
Yeah, there should be a challenge.
Maybe a taco eating challenge or something? A food challenge? No. Spelling bee?
Spelling bee. That's fantastic.
Yeah. So anyway, so apparently that's, Gary Palmer withdraws from the speaker race. So now there are 7 candidates. So one's already off the island. Austin Scott, the guy from Georgia I was thinking of. And Tom Emmer, 3rd in line. So we'll see how. I like the way they're doing it, though, the survival style. All right, we're going to monitor the speaker's race, the latest on the Israeli war, and Jenna Ellis cops a deal. In-depth coverage continues next on The Mark Arum Show.
I look back on this whole experience with deep remorse. For those failures of mine, Your Honor, I have taken responsibility already before the Colorado Bar who censured me, and I now take responsibility before this court and apologize to the people of Georgia.
Jenna Ellis, former attorney for former President Trump, accepts a plea deal in the wide-reaching Georgia Fulton County RICO case. Breaking news here on 95.5 WSB, 4th defendant to take a plea deal. Phil Holloway, WSB legal analyst, is going to join us in 30 minutes to break it down. Is this the first of more to come, or the 4th of more to come? We're also following the race for the speakership at 10:35. We are going to go to New York and get an update on the speaker's race, even though it's happening in Washington. You know what? Let's get an update on what's going on. I'm not going to do that, Deborah. It's saturation. I do want to talk about this story. This is a freaking scary story. Off-duty pilot under arrest after trying to disable a plane's engine on an Alaska Airlines flight. Off-duty pilot under arrest after trying to disable the plane's engines on an Alaska Airlines flight. Chanel Call has more.
Panic inside Alaska Airlines flight 2059 after police say an off-duty pilot riding in the cockpit jump seat tried to cut the plane's engines.
We've got the guy that tried to shut the engines down out of the cockpit.
The San Francisco-bound plane made an emergency landing in Portland, Oregon.
We want law enforcement as soon as we get on the ground and park.
Where 44-year-old Joseph Emerson, a married father of 2 from the Bay Area, was arrested.
Charged with 83 counts of attempted murder. So he was in the jump seat, which is in the cockpit, right? Isn't that where the jump seat is?
Is it? I thought it was like right outside.
Well, what was the movie with Leonardo DiCaprio and Tom Hanks? Catch Me If You Can.
Yeah, Catch Me If You Can.
And he would sit in the jump seat, and I think it was in the cockpit. So he was an off. What the hell is going on there, man? That's crazy. Of all the things you got to worry about on a plane, you know, turbulence, unruly passengers, mechanical failure. I mean, there's so much. If you're paranoid, there's so much. And to think that someone in the jump seat would try to disable the plane's engines. That's bananas. Crazy, crazy. Speaking of crazy, this is I forgot what they're calling it. Super fog in Louisiana.
Oh, I saw that.
Yeah. Officials in South Louisiana say at least 7 people dead, 25 others injured after a massive pileup involving 158 vehicles on Interstate I-75.
As a result of the poor visibility, around 9 o'clock, we started receiving calls regarding crashes that occurred on I-55. That quickly developed into multiple crashes with multiple vehicles involved.
That's Louisiana State Police Sergeant Kate Stegall. Governor John Bel Edwards issued for a call for blood donors and asked for prayers for those hurt and killed. State police say the number of fatalities may increase as first responders clear the crash scenes and search for victims. 7 dead, 25 injured, 158 crash. It reminds me, we had a super fog crash here in Atlanta. I wish I could remember when it was, maybe 15 or 20 years ago. I remember it vividly. I'm in the traffic center, and I get a call from Crash Clark, who's now, he does traffic on Channel 11, but he used to do radio and you know, traffic reporters fraternity. We would always call each other, and he calls me up. He goes, hey, I just got a tip. I don't know if this guy's drunk or not, but he just told me there's a 100-car pileup on I-75 in Bartow County. Have you heard anything? And I'm like, no, man, I haven't heard. That's crazy, 100-car pileup. But then my phone started ringing. There was a super fog. I want to say it was north of Cartersville, but it might have been even further north up near the Tennessee line. And I don't think seven people died. But if you've ever driven in that super fog, you can't see in front of you. And if you're going 65 miles an hour on an interstate and all of a sudden you hit that fog, it's horrible. Yeah, I remember that well. Do you have any recollection of that?
I don't.
Might have been before you were here.
No, if it was 15 years ago, I should have been here, but I don't remember that.
No one crashes audience. I was like, they're drunk. They're pulling your chain.
that's what I would have worked with him that year.
Yeah.
So I'm like, yeah.
I'm like, we would have heard about a 100-car pile up in Bartow County, but sure enough, that was a thing. That's horrible. Ugh. I don't want to leave the house anymore. I don't want to get on a plane. I don't want to get on the interstate. I just want to sit.
Work from home is looking better and better every
day. I just want to sit home and eat bananas. But now bananas are, what's this story, Deborah Green? Bananas are.
It looks like bananas might go extinct is what science is saying.
Now, I'm not talking about Longoria and Sweet Anne bananas. We're talking about Chiquita bananas. Apparently there is some sort of fungi or a bacteria or something that's impacting the banana crop worldwide. Now, I can't imagine. Unfortunately, we see animals go extinct and insects and lizards and stuff. But a banana?
So they're saying that the banana, there's a fungal infection taking over, killing all these bananas. And it actually happened in the 50s. So, like, there was some group of bananas that were pretty common.
Yeah.
That those went extinct already.
Oh, wow.
And the agriculturists had to, like, make a new banana to kind of take its
really?
Place. Yeah. I mean, you crossbreed.
Yeah, yeah.
And it looks like it's happening to these bananas now. So they're working on making a new banana. There you go. A new banana, because these ones are going to go extinct.
What about plantains? Are plantains safe?
No, those are safe. Yeah. When you confuse them at the grocery store.
I did. When Maya's like, can you pick me up some bananas?
How do you confuse the two?
I don't even know.
I was looking at I'm very unfamiliar with the produce section. Like, I'm never in the produce section at the grocery store.
But plantains are a little dark.
I understand. But I'm looking around. I see no bananas. I'm like, oh, their bananas are sold out. So these are banana-esque. They're banana-esque. So I brought them home. I was like, what the hell are these? I'm like, you asked for bananas. That's all they had. She's like, these are plantains, idiot. She didn't call me idiot. She thought idiot. But all right, so Ashley Frass is going to tell us how to plant our own banana trees this Saturday on Green and Growing, 9 a.m. to noon. Oh, 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. on 95.5 WSB. All right, all kidding aside, we've got some big breaking stories. Sabrina Cubitt's going to tell all, including Jenna Ellis pleading guilty, the latest on the war in Israel. When we come back, we're going to get a live update on the race for the speakership. Will we finally have a Speaker of the House? Social media is at Mark Arum, M-A-R-K-A-R-U-M. 3 minutes away from news, weather, and traffic on 95.5 WSB.
The Mark Arum Show is performed before a live studio audience.
10:37 on a busy news day. Welcome back, friends. Mark Arum with you till noon. In 30 minutes, though, we're going to shift gears, talk to rock legend Graham Nash. He's coming to Atlanta. We're monitoring the war in Israel and the Jenna Ellis plea deal. But as promised, updating the race for the Speaker of the House. Joining us live from CBS Radio News, it's Wendy Gillette. Wendy, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Yes, very busy day for all of us in news today.
I guess, since the 9 a.m. meeting began with Republicans, we've already had one proposed candidate drop out, which leaves us with seven possible candidates. Is that correct?
Yep, that is exactly right. It's another day in Washington, another attempt for Republicans to pick a House Speaker who can get enough support for approval. So right now, Republicans are meeting behind closed doors in the nation's capital, voting by secret ballot. That meeting started a little over an hour and a half ago. Seven candidates to choose from after Dan Muser of Pennsylvania dropped out yesterday and Gary Palmer from Alabama also dropped out just as the meeting was starting, according to the Washington Post. They are the front runner who's left, the seven candidates, Majority Whip Tom Emmer from Minnesota, Kevin Hearn from Oklahoma, Jack Bergman from Michigan, Byron Donald from Florida, Mike Johnson from Louisiana, Austin Scott from Georgia, and Pete Sessions from Texas. Only two of them voted to certify the results of the 2020 presidential election, Emmer and Scott, the magic number the nominee will need when the House holds a full vote, presumably later today, 217, which means he needs all Republican votes except for a maximum of four defectors. Republicans held a forum last night before this morning's vote. Bergman says there was a great sharing of ideas, dialogue, priorities, but it does not mean this is going to be easy. Several rounds of voting are expected, and each time the candidate with the lowest number of votes will be eliminated until someone can get a majority mark. So it's a survivor contest.
Yeah, well, exactly how I phrased it last segment. Yeah, it's basically survivor. So with seven candidates, whoever comes in seventh gets eliminated, and then whoever comes in sixth gets eliminated, et cetera, et cetera. But Wendy, what happens when they get down to two? Because we've seen in January and the last couple of weeks, it even in closed-door secret battles, it's tough to get 217. Well, when it comes down to the final two, it'll just be whoever gets the majority of the votes, that's going to be the nominee?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. They're going to just keep voting until someone can get a majority. So that's the way they're going to do it. And then in terms of just taking it back, what's happened so far, if you're not as tuned in as all of us in the news are, Kevin McCarthy ousted as Speaker on October 3rd, so 3 weeks ago. Majority Leader Steve Scalise unable to get enough support in his bid, and then Ohio's Jim Jordan most recently failed in his effort. He was forced to drop out Friday after three failed House votes last week. And as this all has dragged on, some Republicans have talked about expanding the powers of interim Speaker Patrick McHenry, but that has not won broad support because many want a permanent Speaker so they don't have to revisit this crisis in leadership in the future. And remember, this is every day that this ticks on and now taking 3 weeks, is taking away from the time that they would normally be working on funding efforts. The government faces a potential shutdown next month unless legislation can get passed on time. And we know from previous efforts, this can take months generally. And now we're ticking down, you know, to the end of October and funding runs out November 17th.
A lot of heavy lifting ahead for Congress. Wendy Gillette from CBS Radio News joining us live on the Mark Arum Show. Back to January and the three previous votes for Speaker. There were endorsements thrown around, most notably former President Trump. Last go-around endorsed Jim Jordan. Do we have, of the seven candidates, are there any endorsements out there from a McCarthy or a Trump?
Well, this go-around, former President Trump has declined to endorse anyone, although some contenders have asked for support. He says he needs to stay out of it for now after he did back Jordan, and then that didn't end up happening. But he did still post on social media criticizing Emmer, so he says he's staying out of it, but he still posted about the front runner with criticism. And Democrats are saying that they would be open to Tom Emmer. Again, he voted to certify the election, and Democrats find him the least objectionable candidate, but they want assurances that he would be open to government spending as laid out in the debt limit deal, as well as funding for Israel and Ukraine brought to the floor. Emmer does not want to negotiate with Democrats, and he's hoping to try to get enough votes from Republicans. None of the Republicans really want to negotiate with Democrats at all, so that's pretty much off the table.
Interesting. I'm going to ask a question you may not know the answer to, but what does your gut tell you? Do you think that this survivor-style vote will wrap up today and will have a vote for the Speaker on the House floor? Any idea when that might happen?
Yeah, I do actually think it's going to happen because a lot of the reps who had voted against various candidates, the two candidates in the last couple weeks, and they had such difficulty coming up with someone, now they're just saying, we got to get this over with. And people just don't have the same tolerance at this point to have the standoff continuing. So as the representatives came out of meetings last night And even this morning, they were saying, we really think we're gonna get this done, and we're going to have a speaker tonight.
Oh, tonight. Fantastic. Final question for you, Wendy. Great stuff, by the way. I forgot what they called the eight folks that ousted Kevin McCarthy, what nickname, the Gang of Eight or whatever. have any of those eight said, hey, we're just going to go with the flow now, or are they still going to?
Yeah. Yeah, there are a couple who have said, this is enough's enough. So that's why I think it's just a change in the tides at this point. I think it's been long enough, and I think constituents back home are starting to get a little restless. And so I think that's why at this point I think it's going to go forward.
For sure. Wendy Gillette, CBS Radio News. Appreciate your time, Wendy. Thank you so much.
Sure.
All right. All right. Wendy says we're going to have a vote for the speaker today. Remind me to get out of Dodge so I don't have to cover that. I'll be at home listening to 95.5 WSB as we continue our coverage of the race for the speaker, continue our coverage of the Israeli war. When we come back, WSB legal analyst Phil Holloway joins us live. Jenna Ellis, the latest to strike a plea deal, what that remains, what that impact might have for the remaining defendants. Phil's going to join us live next on The Mark Arum Show.
What I did not do, but should have done, Your Honor, was to make sure that the facts the other lawyers alleged to be true were in fact true.
Jenna Ellis, last hour, Fulton County Courthouse entering a plea deal in the widespread RICO case. We continue our team coverage on the breaking news. Joining us live, WSB legal analyst and honorary banana, Phil Holloway. Phil, thanks for making time in a very busy morning for you, my friend.
Always, buddy. Anytime, happy to help.
Every time. This is the fourth plea deal we've seen Fonnie Willis come to an agreement with. Any more surprising on this one than the other three for you?
Well, the fact that there's a plea deal doesn't surprise me, Mark, and I think there's going to be more. This is a practical decision. This allows her to put this open question that's been hanging over her head, so to speak, put it behind her. She indicated in court today that she's making peace with the Colorado Bar Association, where she's licensed, and that this is going to allow her to stay out of prison and continue to practice law and move on with her life without taking the risk of potentially going to prison if a Fulton County jury were to convict her.
Wait, she pled guilty to one count of aiding and abetting false statements and writings. Misdemeanor or felony plea right there, Phil?
This looks like that charge in and of itself is a felony. I mean, it's anytime you're a party to the crime, so to speak, of a felony, and that's what false statements is in Georgia. It's a 1-5 felony. So it looks to me like she's just pled guilty. The prosecutor actually filed a new case against Jenna Ellis just for purposes of this plea. It's called an accusation, charging her with one count, that one that you just mentioned, the false statements. And so entering a plea to that without a reduction would be a plea to a felony. The thing that does surprise me about this case, Mark, more than anything, is that this one is the one where we've seen the apology. You know, it's been read in court now, and that's been a condition of the other defendants. But this is one where she read it in court, and she essentially threw some of the other lawyers under the bus. She basically said, look, these other lawyers who I relied on, fed me bad information. And one of the things that the prosecutor has to prove with a lot of these defendants, including Trump, is that they knew at the time they were saying these things that they were false. And it's hard to get in somebody's head to prove what they subjectively know. But here's a potential witness now for the state who could come forward and tell a jury that these other lawyers gave her bad information. And so that could be very helpful to the prosecutor in the trials that are coming.
You mentioned lawyers, Phil. Powell, Chesbrough, now Ellis. That's three straight attorneys that have taken plea deals. What does that say to you?
Well, each one would have pled guilty for different reasons. Mm-hmm. But it does tell me that even lawyers who are familiar with the justice system, even lawyers are afraid of standing in front of a judge as a defendant who has just had a jury potentially convict them, because there's no opportunity then to negotiate with the judge. You're going to get what you're going to get, and usually following a trial, if you're convicted, usually that means jail.
WSB legal analyst Phil Holloway joining us live on the Mark Arum Show, updating the breaking news you heard here on WSB. Jenna Ellis accepts a plea deal from the Fulton County DA for the remaining defendants, the remaining indictees. This can't be good news, or am I wrong on that?
Well, it's certainly not helpful, and I think that the remaining defense teams would have preferred a more united front. But with 19 defendants, it's very hard to keep these cats herded, so to speak. And the prosecutor really wants to get this down to a manageable number of defendants so that the trial runs more smoothly. So I look for more of these to come in the future.
Jenna Ellis, she's not a Trump. She's not a Giuliani, you know, the bigger names on this. But she's in that second tier of sizable, recognizable names.
Yeah.
And she worked really closely with the former New York mayor. What is the Giuliani camp thinking now that Jenna Ellis, the at one time, I guess, a protege of Rudy Giuliani?
Yeah, when she says things like that she was misled maybe by other lawyers in the case, I'm looking to Rudy Giuliani. That's probably who she's talking about. You know, that's just a guess, but I imagine it's him. And so his defense team is going to look at what she has to say very closely. She would have given to the prosecutor a more extensive statement. Basically, it's called a proffer of what she would testify to if she's called as a trial witness. And so Rudy Giuliani and the other defense teams, they're going to want to get a copy of her proffer session with the district attorney so they can evaluate how they're going to proceed in defending their own cases moving forward.
Final question for you, Phil. Is this the last plea deal, or do you think we have more coming down the pipe?
No, this is not the last one. I know that there are others that the prosecutor is trying to negotiate plea deals with. Whether or not any of them are going to accept that is an open question, but I do think we will see perhaps a handful more. I was talking with Eric Erickson earlier about this, and I think that maybe my best guess is by the time it comes to trial, we'll probably have, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of 5 to 8, maybe 9 defendants left once the case goes to trial. That's just my best guess. We'll see how it plays out.
Indeed. Phil Holloway, WSB legal analyst, is on Twitter, at Phil Holloway ESQ. As always, appreciate your time, brother.
Anytime, Mark. Take care.
There you go. All right. So, God, every day there's more news. Busy news day. Update. You know what? I'm going to hit the breaking news sounder on this one, Andrew. Andrew, I keep calling him. See, you're a bad influence, Deborah.
Where is Henry?
All right, we are down to 5 candidates for Speaker of the House. The 5 remaining. So ballot 3 is going out to the Republican congressman right now. The final 5 that are on the ballot still. Byron Donalds from Florida. Tom Emmer from Minnesota. Kevin Hearn from Oklahoma. Mike Johnson from Louisiana. And Austin Scott from Georgia is
still in the race.
Bergman is the latest one that go out. So Bergman is out. Austin Scott still in. We're down to 5 candidates now. And as Wendy Gillette said, we're going to have a vote on the speaker tonight. Busy news day continues here on 95.5 WSB. Sabrina standing by, the latest on the Israeli war. Jenna Ellis, the race for the speakership. But when we come back, oh, turn it up, Andrew. Graham Nash, rock legend, is going to join us live on the Mark Arum Show. Very excited. Social media's at Mark Arum, MarkArum. 2 minutes away from news, weather, and traffic.
Light the fire. You place the flowers in the vase that you bought today.
11:05 on a very busy news day. Welcome back, friends. The Mark Arum Show with you till noon. Monitoring the war in Israel, the race for the Speaker of the House, and Jenna Ellis pleads guilty this morning in Fulton County Courthouse. Complete coverage of all those 3 big stories throughout the day on 95.5 WSB. But let's cleanse our pal a little bit here. Joining us live on the show, 2-time Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, rock legend Graham Nash. Graham, welcome to the Mark Arum Show. Thank you so much for your time, sir.
You're very welcome, Mark. How are you today?
I'm excited that you are coming to Atlanta playing the Variety Playhouse on September 27th and 28th. Your new album out now is the title. I love the fact that you still get to do what you love.
I know. Isn't aren't I lucky? I've been able to do this since I was like 17 years old. I've been able to do what I wanted to do with my life, and that's an incredibly lucky thing to be doing.
Yeah, I know people listening right now, you know, going to work, and they can't imagine, you know, continuing to do that after retirement age because they don't enjoy what they do. But you absolutely love what you do.
And I've always loved what I do. You know, I've been a photographer actually longer than I've been a musician. But I'm really thrilled that the first show on the 27th is completely sold out. There are a few tickets left for the 28th, and so I hope people will come and join us.
You know, well, that's good to jump on those. Get those few tickets that are available. Variety Playhouse Friday show sold out. A couple of tickets available for Saturday. You know, in these tough political times, Graham, I often go through my iPod Rolodex for political songs that hit close home to me, just to get me through the tough times. And this one is in constant play. Chicago, I believe it's 68. It came out, obviously, the heated political times of the 60s. What was the inspiration of this classic song, Chicago?
I got a call from a friend of mine, Wavy Gravy. His real name is Hugh Romney. Uh-huh. He was the guy that took care of all the people that got a little screwed up at Woodstock. He called me one day and he said, you know, these seven kids have been busted in Chicago for disrupting the Democratic National Convention that was in Chicago in 1968. And I looked at all the footage, of course, and I saw them binding and chaining, you know, Bobby's, you know, it was insane. And he wanted to know if Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young could go to Chicago just to sing and raise some money for their defense fund. I could go. Crosby could go. Stephen and Neil couldn't go for some reason. They had their lives already planned out for them. And so I wrote Chicago just for Stephen and for Neil.
And how quick after you heard from Wavy Gravy did you pen this?
2 days, maybe.
Wow. I guess.
Yeah, I have to feel something before I start to write, and I felt very strongly that this was completely wrong and should not exist.
So no one asked you to write the song. You were just inspired to do it by the events of what were going on in Chicago.
Absolutely. And that's the same with most things that I write about. Like I say, I have to feel something deeply first.
So it's not the writing process it's purely inspirational based. You don't just say, all right, I need to write a new song. Let me see what I can come up with. All of these songs are inspired by something that moves you emotionally.
Absolutely. Yes.
And over the course of your illustrious career, how many songs have you written?
God, I've never even counted it. You know, a couple of hundred maybe.
Yeah. And are these all songs that come to fruition, or do you have a file cabinet of songs that you worked on but didn't pursue further?
I have a storage facility in my mind. I have melodies that I haven't got lyrics to, and I have lyrics that I haven't got melodies to. But when I'm writing, normally I start with a title, mm-hmm. you know, a title that gets down to the very point of which I'm trying to make. I write very simple songs, you know, and in many ways it's harder to write a simple song than it is a complicated song. I want you to know what I'm talking about immediately. And let's start with the title. So that's what I do. I usually start with a title and then start to think about it all and come up with, essences of what I'm trying to say, and then I'm on my way.
So interesting. So we're talking to Graham Nash live on the Mark Arum Show. Variety Playhouse tickets, limited tickets available for Saturday, October 28th. One of my top five favorite songs of all time is this, Mr. Nash. It's Ohio. Again, in the same vein as Chicago, you guys saw something, a social or political injustice, but you didn't write this song, though, right?
No, that was Neil. Crosby called me one day. I was in Los Angeles with Stephen. Crosby said, book the studio tomorrow, book the band, book tape, book our engineer, Bill Halverson. I said, okay, David, but why? He says, wait until you hear this song that Neil has written. I said, tell me about it. He said, well, I showed Neil the, you know, the magazine with the killed students on the cover. And he said, I saw Neil pick up his acoustic guitar, walk out into the woods, came back an hour later with this song that he's calling Ohio. So do me a favor, book the studio. And I did. We recorded Ohio in 3 takes. We knew that we wanted to put it out as a single. We insisted that we get, when we gave it to Ahmet Erdogan, who was the president of Atlantic Records, and we told him we wanted it out immediately. And he said, wait a second, you have teacher children going up into the charts. I said, we don't care. We think it's much more important that people know what the government is doing in their name than us having another hit record. Put it out immediately. And the original artwork for the 45 single was a cover of the Constitution with 4 bullet holes in it.
Let me hear a little bit. Just, you can just feel the emotion in this song. Unbelievable.
Yeah, particularly with Crosby singing like crazy at the end.
Yeah, no doubt. Graham, so your illustrious musical career, I hope I'm not overusing that word, started with the Hollies. You co-founded the Hollies in the United Kingdom, and then you team up and become you team up with David Crosby, and this might be a dumb question. If it is, I forgive me. How did you guys determine the name of the group? Because it's not alphabetical. How did you pick Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young? How was that determined?
That was determined because we tried every combination, and none of them slipped off the tongue like Crosby, Stills, and Nash. Stills, Nash, Crosby? No, that's ugly. Stills, Crosby, Nash? No, that's ugly too. What's the way that it comes off your tongue the easiest way? And that was Crosby, Stills, and Nash.
So it was the most poetic version of the three names.
Exactly.
Was there ever a discussion of having a band name like Hollies or...
No. We'd already done that. You know, they had the Birds and the Buffalo Springfield and, you know, but we wanted to use our names. We wanted to be people. We didn't want to be in a band. We wanted to form a musical entity that could play with anybody they wanted.
Interesting. I've always wondered that, but I guess, yeah, the others sound clunky now. You know, if you rearrange the names the other way, it would have sounded clunky. I'm so excited to have Graham Nash on the show, coming to Atlanta, Variety Playhouse, limited tickets available for September 28th. That's a Saturday. You mentioned your photography. Can I pick your brain about photography for a second?
Sure.
So you mentioned you've done photography longer than you've done music. Obviously, there's been a lot of technological advances in music, but I think they pale in comparison to the advances in photography. As someone who has been in the game so long, in the photographic game, is film still a thing, or is it all digital these days?
It's heading towards all digital, but film will be around for a while. Obviously, there are people, photographers, that only use film. And I only used film until I saw that the resolution of digital is surpassing the resolution of film. And once that happened, I began to realize that this is a train that we need to get on. And this digital world is coming at us really fast. So let's get on with it. And so for the last, 6 or 7 years, I've been using digital. I actually bought a digital camera about 25 years ago in Tokyo in Japan, and it was called a Da Vinci. And it was, the image came out almost like a receipt from when you pump gas into your car,
yeah.
And that little receipt comes out. Well, I mean, unbelievably low res. But it was a very interesting piece of work, and I actually shot a couple of self-portraits on it.
Is there any way folks listening can see your photographic art? Do you have a website?
Yeah, graham.com at gmail.com,
There you go. All right. We got your website and your email address all in one fell swoop. Graham Nash, I so appreciate your time. Huge fan of yours. Can't wait to see you in Atlanta. Saturday, limited tickets available, folks. Saturday, October 28th, Variety Playhouse. Mr. Nash, a pleasure. Thank you so much, sir.
You're very well, Mark. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Take care, my friend. Wow. Bucket list right there, Deborah Green. Bucket list. All right. And if you want to go back and listen to that interview, the podcast will be posted briefly after the show. We'll be right back. This is the Mark Arum Show, 95.5 WSB. For the help that we can bring, we can change.
Very well prepared. They prepared it for a long period of time.
Voice of a translator, translating 85-year-old, released hostage out of Gaza. We played that earlier on the Mark Arum Show. Welcome back. We are obviously monitoring the war in Israel. Sabrina's got the very latest for you in 7 minutes. Coming back to a little breaking news with a local angle, Andrew.
Where is Hector?
Austin Scott now out. We are down to ballot number 4. Austin Scott is out in the race for the speaker. 4 candidates left. Byron Donalds, Tom Enner, Kevin Hearn, and Mike Johnson. Let's Steny Hoyer, Representative Steny Hoyer from Maryland, talking on CNN right now.
The Republican Party is so deeply divided, divisive, and dysfunctional. Is bad for the American people and bad for global security. So that I'm hopeful that the Republicans will decide to come to a consensus and a bipartisan agreement with Democrats so that the House can work on behalf of the American people.
Hoyer, obviously a Democrat out of Maryland, pulling no punches there. So 4 candidates left in the speaker race after 3 secret ballots. And we had Wendy Gillette on from CBS, and it looks like her prediction is going to come true, that we are going to have another vote for the speaker today. So I don't know when that's going to come down. It'll be management's decision if it's broadcast live or not.
It's going pretty quick right now.
I don't think they're going to get in 36 minutes.
No, I'm just looking at the clock. Like, it's going to be during Erickson's show, if anything.
I'm just glad it wasn't going down during Graham Nash. That was.
I would have made the executive call to not break in for that.
That was. Is it out of sorts for me to say that your family has a connection to Graham?
No. It's not a secret or anything. I've said it on the radio before.
Okay. Yeah. I wanted to bring it up.
It
like,
just
no,
didn't
no,
make
no,
any
no.
sense. It was a little too inside. So my husband's family is from the UK.
Yes.
They're from Manchester, England. And my husband's uncle, Fred, actually played with Graham Nash at the very beginning of the Hollies. And I really didn't believe him when he told me that until he showed me all of these old photos that they took when they were teenagers and some playbills. And I already loved the Hollies before I even met Chris. And so it was like a fangirl moment. And the only reason he left is because his father, my husband's great-grandfather, grandfather, was very, very ill. And he was the main caretaker of him. And he could not tour. And so he left the band before they had their big break.
Is there massive regret?
I think he sees it as, I don't know if it's regret, you know, because he had to stay with his family.
Yeah.
But he's still a musician. He's played all through his life and he'll still play. But he sees like, God, that could have been me. Because this was the beginning of the 60s Britpop. So they're right there with the Beatles and the Dave Clark Five and the Stones. I mean, could you imagine how different his life would have been?
Here's something I didn't have a chance to ask Graham. He had a publishing company. And they signed a young musician named Reg Dwight.
Oh, yeah. He played on...
A.K.A. Elton John.
What is it? What, the song that I love?
He played piano and organ on the Holly 69 and 70 recordings. Great stuff with Graham Nash. All right, Sabrina's going to get you caught up to date on the war in Israel, the race for the speaker, and Jen Ellis. When we come back, Ann wants me to talk about it. Rent's going down in Georgia.
In the frenetic pace of attempting to raise challenges to the election in several states, including Georgia, I failed to do my due diligence.
Jen Ellis pleading guilty, one of the big news stories we're following today. Let's go live. Antony Blinken, Secretary of the State, talking at a UN meeting amid the war in Gaza.
Itself, the way it does so matters. We know Hamas does not represent the Palestinian people, and Palestinian civilians are not to blame for the carnage committed by Hamas. Palestinian civilians must be protected. That means Hamas must cease using them as human shields. It's hard to think of an act of greater cynicism. It means Israel must take all possible precautions to avoid harm to civilians. It means food, water, medicine, and other essential humanitarian assistance must be able to flow into Gaza and to the people who need them.
It means civilians must be able to get out of harm's way. It means humanitarian pauses must be considered for these purposes.
That's Secretary of State Antony Blinken talking at the UN right now in New York. That dude's been all over the globe. Keep up the good work. Wise words right there from the Secretary of State. All right, nothing related to the Israeli war here or Jenna Ellis or the race for the speaker. This is a story from Atlanta's Morning News. And Sweet Ann, who pays rent, is very excited that rents are going down in Atlanta.
Nationally, the overall average of apartment rents dropped nearly 1% in September when compared to a year ago. Realtor.com says the uptick in the number of new apartment buildings being constructed helped push prices lower for a fifth consecutive month. And things around Metro Atlanta are moving even faster, with average rents on studio to two-bedroom apartments down almost 5% from last year. Still, rents remain higher than they were pre-pandemic, with the average nationally still up 24% from July of 2019. I'm Bloomberg Steve Potusk for 95.5 WSB.
And if you don't want to give out personal info on the air, I understand, but do you rent currently? Have you seen a decrease in your rent?
I don't pay rent, actually.
Okay, you got a sugar daddy. All right, that's cool.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. So unfortunately, the flip side of the coin, so it's great if you're a renter, tell your landlord, hey, I want a rent decrease. Rents are going down. Not that they'll give it to you, but it doesn't hurt to ask. On the other side of the coin, this is from the Wall Street Journal today. This is staggering. There's never been a worse time to buy instead of rent. That is crazy. It's now 52% more expensive to buy a home than to rent because of climbing mortgage rates. Now, historically, they run on parallel paths. Owning a home and renting a home, it usually works out to be the same. The advantage to buying a home is you get equity in the home and it's a long-term investment. But the cost of living, the cost of housing has pretty much run a parallel track between housing and renting. After the 2008 housing crash, that got rejiggered. But now it's absolutely insane that it's so a person taking out a 30-year mortgage today on a $430,000 home with 10% down would fork out about $3,200 in monthly payments. That's 60% more than if they'd bought the same house 3 years ago. I feel that's directed completely right at me.
Because you just bought a house recently.
I think the Wall Street Journal is basically trolling me right now, saying, idiot, if you bought that house 3 years ago. Now, the mortgage rate we got is not the 8% that it's now. So and I have really good credit, so we got an acceptable mortgage rate, with the idea that when rates come down, we'll just refinance it. I'm not worried about that right now. I am a little stunned, though. If I had bought this house 3 years ago, I'd be saving 60%. But it's crazy that it's now makes more financial sense to rent than to buy. So that's good news for Ann.
Can you rent out your other place?
No, the HOA. I got to sell that freaking
thing. I was
going
to say, you could rent it to Ann.
Why are you bringing that up, Deborah?
I didn't know. I'm sorry. I thought that'd be the solution.
Speaking of rentals, so I've had two great rental deals in my adult life. When I was my first senior year in college, it took me two senior years. So I'd left Marist for a semester, went to Central Connecticut, and then came back to Marist. And there was no housing for me, so I had to go. Everyone had apartments with each other, so I went apartment shopping, and I've talked about it before. I got that subterranean apartment, and the guy was asking $375 a month in rent. Really nice guy. This was in a bad part of town, right? The food stamp scam on the corner.
Oh, like, yeah, with your free sandwiches.
So I got him down to $320 a month, because he's like, all right, this. I like the look of this kid. I'm not worried about it. It was a small one-bedroom apartment, maybe 400 square feet, less than that probably. It was tiny, but I had my own place. I was the only college student that had their own apartment. For my social life, it was amazing. I mean, truly amazing. The only thing, the kitchen didn't have an oven or a stove.
You're a guy. You weren't cooking anything anyway.
I had a toaster oven and a microwave. I was fine. But it was $320 a month. It was phenomenal.
Early 90s?
This would have been 95, 96.
In New York, yeah, that's phenomenal.
So it was great. But I've actually, after that, after I moved to Atlanta, I had a better rental deal. I rented a house in Smyrna with three of my buddies. I'm going to say their names since it doesn't matter. It's past the statute of limitations. My buddy Jay, my buddy Cotton, and my buddy Scott. And it was a four-bedroom house in Smyrna with a pool. Now, the pool worked 2 days out of the year. The first day we got it, and then it broke. Whatever the filtration system broke.
He didn't fix it?
Well, it's the landlord's.
The landlord didn't fix it.
So the landlord then fixed it, and it lasted one day, and it broke again. And by then, it was like, never mind. It just became a pond for rats. Yeah. But it was a four-bedroom for $800 a month. So I paid $200 a month.
That's fantastic.
It was amazing. Can you imagine? $200 a month.
I think
in a house.
Very first apartment might have been $200. And that's me splitting it with somebody. Yeah. Yeah.
And the fringe benefits were amazing. It was within walking distance to a Wendy's.
That's why you picked it. Like, never mind the pool.
You know, you go to real estate, listen, like waterfront, access to the
safe schools, public transportation.
I can walk to the Wendy's. That's amazing. Yeah. What's the lowest you ever paid in rent? Do you remember?
It would have been when I was in school and I had multiple roommates. So it would have been like $215. I mean, I had my own room.
Yeah.
You know, girls are a little more particular. We had our own room. So I still shared an apartment with somebody. And I thought that was a lot when I was in school. And it wasn't the greatest apartment. And it wasn't very new. And it wasn't in a nice area. But, I mean, it was fine.
$200.
It's what you do at that age, right? You live in shady places.
Do you remember the least amount you ever paid for rent, Longoria?
I think it was $300.
$300.
We had a house that was $900. Three bedroom.
And there's three of you?
Yeah.
This was in Corpus or?
No, it was in Austin.
Wow. Well, I imagine what the rents are in Austin now.
Oh, yeah. Go look at that house now.
Yeah, that house is probably at least $2,000-$3,000 a month.
Yeah.
I would imagine.
So your rent would have gone up from $300 a month to $1,000 a month.
Yeah.
My apartment in Poughkeepsie was $320 a month. It's now up to $330 a month. Poughkeepsie hasn't really done well. And it's still a rough neighborhood. I pull it up on Google Maps sometimes and reminisce about
back in the day when I had no stove.
Yeah, I didn't need a stove. I had a toaster oven. All right, we're going to come back. We're going to update the big breaking stories, the war in Israel, the race for the speakership, and Jenna Ellis pleading guilty. All of the social media accounts are active, at Mark Arum, MarkArum. Back after this.
That you testify truthfully at all hearings or trials involving co-defendants, that you have no communication with co-defendants, witnesses, or the media until all cases have been closed.
Yes.
That's Daisha Young, assistant district attorney in Fulton County. At the beginning, at the end, was Jenna Ellis agreeing to the terms of her plea agreement. Breaking news you heard live here during the Mark Arum Show. Fourth indictee to reach a plea deal with the prosecutors in Georgia on the big RICO case. Phil Holloway joined us earlier to discuss that. We'll continue to monitor that situation as well as the breaking news with the Israeli war. The latest news, we took a little bit of the Secretary of State talking at the UN. What we missed, Deborah, was him saying that he is requesting that Hamas release all the hostages before anything gets done. So we've had four released, still over 200. Secretary of State forcefully saying, Hamas, release all of the hostages before we can do any sort of negotiating. So we'll monitor that. And we're down to four candidates for the speakership. For the next House Speaker. And that vote, as we heard from CBS correspondent Wendy Gillette, they it looks like we're going to have that fourth vote today. I'm pretty excited about that. I hope it's done before 6:30.
What happened at
6:30? I've gone to that Michelin restaurant.
Watch it happen at like 6:40.
Yeah. I'll just set my DVR.
Hey, you just put it on. Watch it on Twitter, right? That's what.
No, I'm going to be at the Michelin Awards ceremony. I'm going to find out which restaurants in Atlanta get Michelin stars. I'm very excited about that, and I hope there's food there. You're a world traveler. You ever been to Stonehenge?
No,
never.
So
really,
my husband's never even been there, which is crazy. So that is our next trip when we go back to England to visit his family. We're doing a day trip to Stonehenge.
I've never been to Great Britain, and I'm definitely going to go to London. But I also go to. Well, I want to do the Downton Abbey tour, but I also want to do Stonehenge. And it's been assumed that So they're like 6,000 years old, they think.
Older, possibly.
Yeah. But they always thought they had Welsh. It was the Welsh people that...
Yeah, the early Druids, yeah.
The early Druids. New DNA evidence. You know, I'm a history nerd. Apparently, the people that built Stonehenge originated in Anatolia, which is now modern-day Turkey. So they found some sort of DNA at Stonehenge, and were able to trace it back to modern-day Turkey. So people left modern-day what is now Turkey, what then was Anatolia, moved to Iberia and then parts of Spain and Portugal before heading north towards Britain. Those people are believed to have reached the island around 4,000 B.C., with Stonehenge being built from 3,000 B.C. to 2,000 B.C. And part of that migration from Turkey to England, these historians are alleging that they introduced farming to Europe. But before these people migrated, it was small traveling groups who lived hunter-gatherer lifestyles in Europe, in France and Spain, and they brought in fishing. Yeah, and they brought farming over. That's kind of fascinating to me. I got to go to Stonehenge.
You'll love England overall.
Oh, for sure. I just worried. So all the pictures I've seen at Stonehenge, and of course, European vacation. it doesn't look like they have a snack bar set up.
Oh, no, they've changed everything now.
Really?
Yeah, because it used to just be Stonehenge.
Yeah, there was nothing else.
Yeah, and now there's actually like, there was a joke when it happened, like, oh, it only took 4,000 years for them to build a visitor center. So
and
you can actually, yeah,
center.
So there's actually places that you can stay and you can visit the old cathedral that's down there. Yeah. And yes, there's plenty of snacks.
And I've watched a couple documentaries on Stonehenge, and because technology is getting so far advanced now, they're able to sonically map
like
out.
Down, yeah.
Yeah, so there's other little mini Stonehenges around the area that you know, were lost to time.
But I have seen like a knockoff Stonehenge that was closer to Coventry where we were.
Anyway, that's interesting. Neolithic humans. Neolithic humans. Could that be the fact of the day that I just stole from Andy?
Longoria's fact of the day.
From Andy. No, it's from yesterday when you were wondering why we call people that are named Richard Dick.
Yes.
So in Old French, Richard takes a harder CH sound than the modern one.
Rickard.
Yeah.
Ricard.
Ricard.
Okay.
Rick Hart, as opposed to Richard. This was often shortened to Rick or Rick, and the following style of the time, the R could be substituted with a D, giving Dick or Dick. The same applies to William and Bill situation.
All right. Great fact today. I don't know if you know this, Andrew, but Liam is a shortened version of William.
Really? I did not know that.
You didn't know that?
No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Liam is a short.
I should have listened yesterday.
Yeah. Good job. So my brother's name is Richard, but Richie is his nickname.
You call him Richie?
Yeah. No, I don't. To my knowledge, no one's called him Dick as a nickname. He's a nice guy anyway. I don't know why he would.
Not my Richie.
Yeah, my mom.
You don't ever say that to him?
My mom named him after Richie. That,
yeah, yeah, that's what it was.
Richie,
right?
Richie Valens. Yeah, mom was a big fan, as is Andrew. That's why you guys get along.
Yeah.
That's why I get along with your mom.
That's right.
We're simpatico. Tranquilo. Oh, we have tickets to give away. What do we have here?
Yeah, I got a pair of tickets for Kathleen Madigan at the Cobb Energy Center on February 3rd.
Boom. Let's make it easy for Sweet Ann. Third caller, since it's February 3rd. Third caller to 404-872-0750. Wins a pair of tickets to see...
Kathleen Madigan.
There you go. Stars of the show, Andrew. We got a lot of them today. Man, we got a lot of them.
And now, are you guys ready for the Mark Arum Star of the Show?
First and foremost... Sherry Levitin from Sandy Springs. If you missed my interview with her, travel agent that was in Israel when the terrorist attack happened and then was able to get 110 people, students, out of Israel and back to the States. Longo is going to post the podcast right after the show. Go back and listen to that interview. It was amazing. She gets a star of the show. Phil Holloway jumped in on the breaking news with Jenna Ellis. He gets a star of the show. Wendy Gillette from CBS talking about the speaker. We'll give her a star of the show. And the biggest star of the show, well, the biggest star on the show, Graham Nash. Crosby, Stills, Nash. Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young. Dollies.
The Hollies.
The Hollies.
Did you say the Dollies?
My blood sugar's low. I haven't eaten yet today. That was amazing. If you missed that interview, check out the podcast. Just go to markarum.com for all your Mark Arum needs. Tomorrow on the show, we've got... a lot of amazing stuff, my producer tells me.
Clark Howard at some point.
All right, Clark Howard at some point. There you go. Conversation shall continue on all the social medias at Mark Arum, M-A-R-K, ARUM. A lot of big news to cover. The expanded new news coming up. Stay safe. Have a great Tuesday, Atlanta.
The world he left behind not so long ago. He's leaving.
Leaving.
On that midnight train to Georgia.
Leaving on the midnight train.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Said he's going.
Guests of the Mark Arum Show stay at the All Suite Omni Hotel, located in the heart of Chicago's Magnificent Mile.